Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The school year has ended, or it will very soon. The weather is hot and steamy, and hopefully you have a little more downtime than usual coming your way in the next couple of months. It's time to make your summer reading list. And to help you do that, we've asked some of Iowa's independent booksellers to pick their favorite new books. Jan Weissmiller is here from Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. Hello, Jan.
Hello, Charity.
And happy anniversary to Prairie Lights, the 40th anniversary of the store. That's very exciting.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And Tim Budd, also of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City, is here. Hello, Tim.
Hello. Good morning, Charity.
And joining us is Kathy Magruder from Page Turner's Books in Indianola. Hello, Kathy.
Hi, Charity.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
And we're going to start with fiction. And I'm going to give Tim the first shot here at talking about one of his favorite new fiction books. Tell me what you've got.
Well, I'd like to start with a book called How to Stop Time, a novel by Matt Haig. And it is my favorite novel that I've read this spring. He's a wonderful writer. I've read several of his other novels. And How to Stop Time deals with a man named Tom Hazard who has a genetic mutation that allows him to age very slowly. So he's in his mid-40s, or he appears to be, but he's actually over 400 years old. And he begins this stage of his life as a history teacher for a middle school. The students love him because he makes history come alive.
Sure, because he's seen it all.
Right. So the book is basically his present day teaching, at the same time flashing back to his birth in Elizabethan England and the various historical periods he's lived through. But he, because of his slowness in aging, he can't stay in one place very long. It arouses suspicion. And especially in the early years of his life, it brought up theories about, you know, devil and witchcraft and things like that. So at this point of his life, he's trying to resolve this, because what's the point of living so long if you're alone and right. There's no one to share it with? Now, in some other author's hands, this could be horribly sentimental and really sappy. But in Mr. Haig's hands, it's a really lovely book about finding meaning in your life, no matter how long or short it may be.
Oh, that sounds fascinating. And as a mother who may be thinking about some summer reading club opportunities with a teenager, is this a book that teenagers might also enjoy, or is it strictly for older readers?
No, I think teenagers might like it. You know, it's been a while since I've read it. I don't think there's any red flags that I would put up there about it. It will give them some great history lessons at the same time. So I think they would like it.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's How to Stop Time by Matt Haig. Tim's first pick of the day. And Kathy, how about you go second? Do you have a fiction book to share with us?
Oh, I sure do. My favorite book this year was a novella by Martha Wells called All Systems Red. It's science fiction. The main character, Murderbot, is a security bot who's hacked its control module and is protecting a group of scientists while ignoring the company's communications. It says, "I could have become a mass murderer after I hacked my governor module, but then I realized I could access the combined feed of entertainment channels carried on the company's satellites." It had been well over 35,000 hours or so since then, with still not much murdering, but probably, I don't know, a little under 35,000 hours of movies, serials, books, plays, and music consumed. As a heartless killing machine, I was a terrible failure. And this would be something that would be a lot of fun for a teen book club.
All right. Nice
and short. Murderbot stuck with its scientists on a remote planet. Something goes terribly wrong. Murderbot is a snarky, self-conscious, and very dangerous character. All Systems Red just won the Nebula Award, and there's the second book in the series just came out, Artificial Condition. And in that, Murderbot goes in search of some answers to its past.
All right. And I think you also just picked out my Father's Day gift from my husband. So that's a great idea. All Systems Red and Artificial Condition is the next in the series by Martha Wells. And Jan, it's your turn to tell us about a fiction pick. Wait, you were just reading.
Oh, I was reading quickly.
All right.
The
What's your first fiction pick?
It's called The Optimistic Decade by Heather Abel, and I was just reminding myself
just
that
getting
I
getting absorbed in a book.
That I remembered her her bio well enough because she's 40 and it's her first novel, because she's been a reporter, like a Pulitzer Prize winning reporter, and so it's the second novel I've read that's been written by a reporter, and it's interesting what they bring to that.
And Geraldine Brooks, who's one of my favorite authors of all time, that's how she started as well.
Yeah. Anyway, it's light in one way, but serious in another, which I think is kind of a great thing for summer read. And the main character is Rebecca Silver, and she's a 19-year-old just finishing her first year at Berkeley. She's an only child, and her parents had started a free speech newspaper in the 60s. And as the book begins, and she assumes that she will take it over, it will be her life too. She's very close to them. But her father's going to throw it in. He just feels like he can't do it any longer, and so they don't want to tell her this. And so they send her to this sort of survivalist camp in Colorado that her cousin has been running for like 10 years. And it actually does change her life. I mean, and so the reader is set up to expect her to have this sort of heartbreak over the end of the newspaper, and instead she's pretty much immediately ensconced in this world of this camp. And partly because she falls in love, but also because of living in this, you know, sort of extreme, you know,
wilderness kind of thing. Yeah.
But her cousin is also having his own kind of breakdown. And there's some ranchers involved with that. And it's just a really good read. It's really well written. And the title comes from the fact that her father tells her sort of, you know, you get one optimistic decade in your life, and this may be yours.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a little depressing.
I know. Well, it's also not true.
Right.
I mean, you know.
Hopefully not true. All right, The Optimistic Decade by Heather Abel. I was thinking that was going to be an optimistic decade culture-wide, but it's individual.
Yes, that's
interesting.
Right.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. All right, we are back around to you, Tim. What's your next pick?
My next book is called The Changeling by Victor Laval. A really lovely book, and this is my fantasy kind of pick for the summer. It's just come out in paperback, so you don't have to worry about getting splashed by the pool or a little mustard on it. This is the story of Apollo Kagwa, who is the son of a Ugandan refugee. His father abandoned the family when he was quite young, and it tracks his life growing up. He marries a lovely woman named Emma. They're about to have a child, and he can't wait for fatherhood because he's going to be so much better at it than his father was. But after the child is born, his wife Emma starts to suffer some spells of depression, maybe even delusion. He puts it down to postpartum depression, and then she eventually does the most unthinkable act a mother can do and disappears. So the rest of the book is him trying to track down his wife. And this is based on the old myth of the fairies that would steal your child and leave a child in its place. It's set in modern-day New York, so it has that tone of kind of Rosemary's Baby, where we're in a very urban atmosphere where everything is normal, day-to-day lives, but then there's this menace that's kind of underground.
Supernatural.
So he goes on this odyssey through a lot of boroughs and trips in New York. And also because the author is African-American, all the characters are African-American, but you don't even really know, which I think is just wonderful and refreshing to read in a book.
Yeah.
It's referenced by his mother was a refugee from Uganda. And then later he and his best friend are trying to stake out a place in New York. And his friend is concerned because we're two black guys sitting in a car at 3 a.m. and the police are going to come and stop us. So occasionally you get hints of it. But it's just so refreshing to read a really wonderfully written book. I mean, I can still remember some of the sentences in it that has a great story and at the same time is, you know, culturally more diverse than maybe most books we're used to reading.
All right. The Changeling by Victor Laval. And Kathy, it's your turn again.
Great. My next pick is Spinning Silver by Naomi Novik. It's a fantasy, and it doesn't come out until July, so you'll have to wait a little bit for it. But the main character, Miriam, is the daughter and granddaughter of moneylenders, and her father is a terrible moneylender. he's so soft that he just can't get money out of anybody after he's given it away. So she takes it into her hands to collect money, and she's so good at it that she gets the reputation of being able to turn silver into gold, which attracts the attention of the Ice King of the Starrick, who takes her away and sets her to several impossible tasks. Aided by a peasant girl and the bride of a czar who is not at all what he seems, Miriam sets out to break the enchantment and save both herself, her family, her friends, and even her country. It's just fabulous.
Inspiring fantasy, sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
And this is loosely based on the Rumpelstiltskin fairy tale, isn't it?
Yes, and several others.
Right, right.
All right, that's Spinning Silver by Naomi Novik. And Jan, I think we have time for one more from you before the break.
Okay. Well, one of the things we've done at Prairie Lights to celebrate our 40th anniversary is to have a list of all of our favorite books, all of us that work there. And it's sort of like, you know, you could choose one this month and switch out next month. But when Tim said he could remember some of the sentences in this last book that he read because it was so well written, I decided I'd talk for a minute about my book on that list,
okay,
which is The Collected Stories of Deborah Eisenberg. And she is just an incredible short story writer. And she has one of the stories in that book that's very memorable to me and which I've probably read seven times at least, is called Twilight of the Superheroes, and it takes place in and around September 11th, and the characters are a group of young people that are sort of at loose ends, and the uncle of one of them who has arranged for them to be living in this apartment that's very close to the Twin Towers. But it's funny too. I mean, it's a remarkable story. It's really remarkable. But there's a line in it where the uncle is remembering how he ended up having the care of this sort of feckless, you know, 23-year-old, and it was because he was on the phone with her mother, and the mother was just the boy's mother, mm-hmm, you know, sister-in-law, and she's just talking and talking, and he said, and so eventually I would have promised her anything if she would only hang up. And I think of that all the time.
All right. The Collected Stories of Deborah Eisenberg. Not a new one, but a favorite of Jan Weiss-Miller of Prairie Lights Bookstore. Tim Budd is also here, Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. And Kathy Magruder from Page Turner's Books in Indianola. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are talking about the best new books for your summer reading list. Jan Weiss-Miller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City are here, and they've made their lists. Kathy Magruder from Page Turner's Books in Indianola is also here. And of course, we will post all of these books on our website later today at iowapublicradio.org. So if you don't quite get a title written down, don't worry. The information will be there later as well. We're still talking about fiction, and there's so many great novels to read. Tim, I think it's your turn again.
Thank you. My choice for my science fiction pick for the summer just came out in paperback a few months ago. It's called Born, B-O-R-N-E, Born by Jeff Vandermeer. And that author's name might be familiar to listeners because his previous books was a trilogy called the Southern Reach Trilogy, and the first one, Annihilation, was recently made into a movie that's, I think, still playing in movie theaters. Born is, I would say, hardcore science fiction. It is, we are in some desolate, deserted, destroyed city whose main industry was biotechnology. When that industry fell apart, the city became filled with these kind of experiments, some of them genetic testing, some of them genetic modification. There are feral children that run through the streets, some that have wings. There is a giant bear that is loose in the city. So there are all these kind of dangers. It's a very scary, dangerous world. And the main character is a woman named Rachel, who is a scavenger. She finds things, brings them back home to her boyfriend, Wick, who was a former employee at this biotech company before it fell apart. And she finds a strange thing that is unidentifiable, which she names Bourne, B-O-R-N-E, because she had to carry it back to the apartment. It is a small lump of something that begins to grow. And she sort of falls into a maternal role with it and nurtures it. It begins to talk. It begins to get bigger. She starts to teach it about the world they live in. So it's an interesting, we're in a horribly violent, strange, desolate world, and somehow raising this thing that is probably an experiment, could be dangerous, we don't know, of taking in this orphan creature, I guess, and raising it. It's a fascinating look at what messing with genetics will do to our world, how you find some sort of redemptive qualities in a world that offers very few. And Bourne turns out to be a creature with a conscience. And so there's some interesting philosophy in this book as well. It's a wonderful, interesting, different read.
Right. Bourne by Jeff Vandermeer. And next up, it's your turn, Kathy.
Well, this isn't really a new book, but it was one of my favorite books, and it makes a great summer read. It's A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Tolles. It's 1922, and the Russian Count Alexander Rostov has been arrested, and he's charged with writing a counter-revolutionary poem. And he is declared a former person and sentenced to house arrest in the Hotel Metropole in Moscow. And he's stuck away in a tiny room on the top floor with just a few personal possessions. And he ends up spending the next 40 years in the hotel, not being able to take a step outside. He is the most delightful character. He's a gentleman in just the true sense of the word. He is kind, interesting, interested. He's always optimistic. And if you don't fall in love with the Count by the end of the book, there's something wrong with you.
Everybody does.
Everybody. It's a great big book, so it makes a wonderful summer read. And if you haven't read this one yet, you really, really have to.
All right. A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Tolles. Mm-hmm. And you got a very firm head nod from Jan on this one, too. So that's a double endorsement.
Yeah, it's one of those books that's kind of, you know, people read it and then they say, what's like it? And there's really not anything like it. And we had that trouble with All the Light You Cannot See, too, you know.
Yeah. All right. Jan, it's your turn again.
Well, I'm going to stick by my little short story devotion
right
here for a minute. We were talking at the break about how a short story can contain a perfect moment. And you could maybe create a whole story around either a sentence or a moment in time. And I think that's true. And so I encourage people to develop their love of short stories. And so this is a collection by Curtis Sittenfeld, who is the author of novels only until this collection. She wrote Prep, which is her novel Prep is about a scholarship student at a boarding school, and Eligible is one of the Jane Austen takeoffs. It's absolutely fabulous. And she has a novel called American Wife about Laura Bush. And so this is her first collection of short stories, and it's called You Think It, I'll Say It. And that title story, that title comes from a story in which most of these characters, let me interrupt myself for a minute, but most of these characters are women with children, with young children in their 40s that are sort of looking at changing their lives somehow, or in some subtle way. And I would say that's a theme throughout the collection. And the first...
a theme throughout my social circle.
Yeah. In fact, I said to someone in your age group the other day, this is really for you, but I loved it too. But You Think It, I'll Say It is where there are a number of couples at some social thing, and a man who the speaker has never really thought much of comes up to her and says, you think it, I'll say it. Or you think it, or anyway, she's supposed to say what she thinks. I'll think it, you say it, you know, anyway. And so they start doing this at all these parties. And, you know, she's making all these caustic remarks about all these couples. And she falls in love with him. And that was really not his intention.
All right. That sounds like a great summer read. You Think It, I'll Say It by Curtis Sittenfeld. And I love it when novelists bring out a short story collection, because I imagine, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I imagine these short stories sort of collecting over time while they're writing bigger works.
Yeah.
And then they present them like a gift to their fans.
That's so. Right.
All right, Tim, back to you.
Well, my next choice is a novel called We Were the Lucky Ones by Georgia Hunter. And I know perhaps we're sort of oversaturated with World War II novels, but this one is a bit different. This is the story of loosely based on her grandfather's story, but it's a Jewish family, mother and father with five children, and the children range from probably middle to late teens up until their mid-20s. The oldest daughter has a baby of her own, 1939 in Poland. And then we just follow this Jewish family through the course of the war till 1945. Now, some people think, oh, this is going to be so depressing, but the title is a bit of a spoiler. We Were the Lucky Ones. So not quite as bad as you might think. What's interesting about it is that the family gets totally dispersed throughout Europe. And so really, the goal is, how can we get the family back together? The one son is in Paris studying architecture in 1939 and can't travel back to Poland to see the family for holidays. So he's sort of marooned there. Other family members go off to try to find work. One is sent to a gulag in Siberia. So it's really a novel about family, about staying together, about doing what you need to do to survive. And there really aren't any soldiers or battles in this book. What we're really trying to do is see how war can inflict so much, you know, hardship on people who really have nothing to do with the actual fighting. They're just trying to maintain their family relationships. It's very compelling, very positive, and heartwarming, and a really nice a summer read, I think.
So. All right. And I think a lot of people can't get enough of World War II novels. Well, so
then this is for them.
All right. We Were the Lucky Ones by Georgia Hunter. And Kathy, we're back to you.
I've got a mystery for you.
All right.
The Graves, A Fine and Private Place by Alan Bradley is the latest in a series about what the Seattle Times calls the world's greatest adolescent British chemist busybody sleuth, Flavia Deluce, and she is a delightful character. After a horrible family tragedy, she and her sisters are on a river trip, drifting down a river in a punt, and they drift past a church where a notorious vicar had recently dispatched three of his female parishioners by spiking their communion wine with cyanide, and Flavia is just delighted because she's really into poisons. She's trailing her fingers in the river when something bumps them, so she grabs hold and ends up pulling a corpse into the boat. And she is thrilled to death because she's got a murder that's going to take her mind off of everything. She is a delightful character. One of the nicest things about her is that although she's brilliant, she's into chemistry, she loves to investigate, she still acts like a normal 12-year-old a lot of the times. And this is just a fun, fun series.
All right. The Graves, A Fine and Private Place by Alan Bradley. I know a lot of people like to spend a little time with mysteries, especially in the summertime, it seems. Jan, back to you.
Paul's favorite book, too, is an Alan Bradley book.
Wonderful.
Sweetness
Those
at the Bottom of the Pie.
Yeah.
But anyway, I want to talk about a book called Never Anyone But You by Rupert Thompson. He's a British novelist. His previous novel, Insult, is said to be David Bowie's favorite book. And he's actually going to be at Prairie Lights on June 23rd. But his new novel is an historical novel that's set in France, and it starts in the teens, and then, you know, before and after World War I, and moves through the end of World War II. And the characters are real. I mean, they're based on an actual couple, and it's two women who are stepsisters and fall in love. And so you see the families that they come from, you know, their parents marry after their spouses had died, and you see this relationship develop, and then you see they're a writer and a painter, these two women, and you see their relationship with the surrealists in Paris, and then they decide to move to a Channel Island during World War II and get involved with the resistance, with the French resistance, and it's really a wonderfully told book, and I learned a lot about the Nazis in France that I hadn't known. But in the context of their relationship and their relationship to art, and it's just a really wonderful book.
All right. Never Anyone But You by Rupert Thompson.
That's right.
Again, for people who can't get enough of World War II novels, right? All right. I think maybe we should have last picks in fiction because we've got a lot of nonfiction books to talk about as well. Tim?
My last pick will then be a book called The Wolves of Winter. And you can tell by that title, it is set in winter. So if you're baking from the summer sun, it might be nice to at least escape, you know, literally, or through your literature,
right,
and have a cold spell. This is by Tyrell Johnson, his first novel. And it is, I guess you could technically call it science fiction fantasy, but it does not read like that. It reads more like a Western. It is set in Western Canada, British Columbia, the Yukon area. There has been, of course, as is with many of these books, a horrible epidemic that's wiped out the population, and there has been some nuclear war. We later find out that this was an attempt to kind of control the epidemic by using bombs. But we follow the family of Lynn McBride. She is a young 19-year-old who is the main hunter, trapper. They are really living a pioneer existence as they hide out here in the Canadian wilderness. So it's her mother, her brother, herself, and an uncle, and they're sort of living this kind of pioneer lifestyle until an outsider finds them there, and of course their whole world starts to turn upside down. But what I love about this book is it's incredibly readable from the first chapter. I mean, you just get sucked in and can't put it down. And 5 years ago, this would have had a male main character. But we have this wonderful dynamic woman who is the main protector, the main, hunter, trapper, food provider. She is really the backbone of this family. And it's just delightful to read a really strong female character who is not an idiot, who doesn't trip and break her ankle when she runs away, and is just a source of strength for everyone. And it's a really fascinating read.
All right. So maybe crank down the AC.
Yeah, right. Experience the whole thing.
All right. The Wolves of Winter by Tyrell Johnson. And Kathy, what's next on your list?
Next on my list is It Takes One. It's the first in a mystery series by Kate Kessler. And the main character, criminal psychologist Audrey Hart, she specializes in adolescent psychology, returns to her small town after 7 years. And this is really a problem because she, when she was 13 years old, and her best friend Maggie ended up killing Maggie's abusive father, and she was sent away to prison where she developed an interest in criminal psychology. She comes back. Everybody's gossiping. Her first night in town, she gets together with Maggie. They get in a big argument. The next day, Maggie's found dead. And so Audrey has to figure out what happened and why, because, you know, she's already a murderer. People suspect her already. There's some great romance, really interesting, strong character, great small town. I live in a small town, too, so I really responded to everybody knowing everybody else.
I think a lot of Iowans can relate to that. All right. It Takes One by Kate Kessler. And Jan, your last fiction pick for the day?
I think I'm going to talk about The Great Believers by Rebecca Mackay. And it is it's a novel that's set that moves back and forth between Chicago in the 1980s and France in about 2015. And really the characters are, well, actually the main character is a woman, but her brother was one of the early victims of the AIDS crisis. And so all the parts that are set in Chicago in the early 80s are really just at the onset of that, when people are blindsided by it and no one has figured out how to deal with it yet. And then it moves, and she, after losing her brother, has a child when she's still quite young that she feels she wasn't able to really nurture well because she was still grieving and still involved with her brother's friends. And so that girl is now in her late 20s, and she's fled, and she's in France, and the mother's really worried about her. And so you have all these sections that are taking place in France where the mother is trying to sort of rescue her 20-year-old child, mm-hmm. and these flashbacks to what was happening in Chicago in the 80s, but the two parts just keep coming closer and closer together because there are things that are happening. This girl had also known the friends of her mother's brother as a child, and so the two sections of the book just keep moving closer and closer together as you read it. But it's really a moving and clear portrait of these characters. I mean, you read about them outside of their circumstances. They become larger than their circumstances, which I think is probably what makes a great novel.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, The Great Believers by Rebecca Mackay. Is that a long book?
It's pretty long.
It sounds kind of epic.
Yeah, yeah.
All
it's
right.
long.
Nice.
Not
something
a short story.
Something to dig into for the summer. All right. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. We are talking with some of Iowa's independent booksellers about their favorite new books for your summer reading list. Jan Weissmiller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City are here, along with Kathy Magruder from Page Turner's Books in Indianola. And we're going to move on to nonfiction when we get back from the break. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's our summer books show. We are talking about some of the best new books for your summer reading list. Jan Weissmiller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City are here, and so is Kathy Magruder from Page Turner's Books in Indianola. We've been talking about fiction exclusively so far, so we're going to turn to nonfiction next. There are so many great books out there. Tim, what's your first nonfiction pick?
My first pick is the coolest book in the store right now, I'm sorry to say. 100 Books That Changed the World by Scott Christensen and Colin Salter. And this is, you know, a little bit oversized, about the size of maybe a phone book or a chemistry textbook, not too thick. But what they've done is looked at 100 books that changed the world, either because of the information they conveyed, because of the way it changed the way we thought about ourselves or each other or the society we lived in. And there are some fascinating choices. They have an intro that kind of explains the history of the book in general and how they chose just 100. But we start with the I Ching from 2800 BC and end with Naomi Klein, This Changes Everything, about climate change. And there are some very surprising books in there. There are some we would expect, of course. The Bible, Dr. Spock's Child and Baby Care. But The Cat in the Hat, Harry Potter, 1984, of course. Some of its historical things. But they have a little essay about when the book came out, a little synopsis, why it was so controversial or radical at the time. And then these lovely images of the first editions of the books. And it is so interesting to look at how these books first appeared. So it's really more of a reference that you could leave at home or in the cottage or whatever to give you some ideas of maybe other things you should be reading and why, and to see if they have the same impact on you as they did on the folks who read them when they first came out. So it's a really nice, informative book that will help kickstart you into maybe reading some of these historical books that really did change the world.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. All right, 100 Books That Changed the World by Scott Christensen and Colin Salter. And Kathy, what's first on your nonfiction list?
My first is The Electric Woman, a memoir in death-defying acts by Tessa Fontaine. Fontaine spent 3 years taking care of her mother who'd had a stroke, and it was one emergency after another after another. When her mother finally becomes well enough, she goes on a trip, and Tessa is left by herself with nothing to do. And she is invited to come and play in the World of Wonders, America's last traveling sideshow, by a literal giant. So how could you resist something like that? Haven't you always wanted to run away and join the circus? So she does. And she becomes, an escape artist, a snake charmer. She does an act with electricity. And she starts meeting all of the carnival performers and learns more and more about them and discovers that they've got a really interesting family. And the writing is wonderful. What a fascinating story. I mean, seriously, haven't you wanted to run away and join the circus?
Maybe a few times I've considered it. That's, all right. The Electric Woman, a memoir and death-defying acts by Tessa Fontaine. That sounds great. All right, Jan.
Well, I've got this book that probably everybody has heard of because it's been such a big deal for the last month or so. But it's Educated by Tara Westover, and it's a memoir. She was raised by homeschooling, you know, back to the land Mormon. Well, you know, extreme Mormons, not in Idaho, actually not in Utah, but in Idaho. And she was one of seven children. I think she's the youngest. And by the time she came along, her parents weren't even pretending they were homeschooling. I mean, she learned to read because one of her brothers could read. But mostly she was working in her father's junkyard and had a pretty extreme childhood. But she got into BYU because, you know, clearly BYU is going to accept homeschooled students. And she tried twice to pass the ACT to get a high enough score on the ACT to get in, and she did. And not only did she get in, she flourished and won a scholarship for a semester in Cambridge, met a don at Cambridge that thought she should come back and pursue a PhD, and now she has a PhD in, she has an MA in history, I mean in philosophy, and a PhD in history from Cambridge. And then she started, you know, working on this memoir.
And she's certainly got a story to tell.
She really has a story to tell, and she is, you know, she's still in touch with a couple of her brothers, but she's not at the moment in touch with her parents. And it's very remarkable. It's remarkable that she could have written so well, never having trained as a writer. And it's also not just one-sided. She has some really beautiful memories of this place too. And that's one of the whole, you know, sort of sources of tension in the book, that how does she keep those memories? And her little introductory epigraph, or not whatever it's called in the beginning, by Virginia Woolf, I think is really lovely. And it's, "The past is beautiful because one never realizes an emotion at the time. It expands later, and thus we don't have complete emotions about the present, only about the past." And having emotions about something that you have tried to deny happened is another thing that she's dealing with throughout this book. And her feelings about education. I mean, she titles it Education because she has a very strong belief that education is for the whole soul, the whole human being. It's not something that you get with an end in mind, with a job in mind.
Yeah.
And she's actually going to be writing for the New York Times on education.
All right.
Yeah.
So Educated by Tara Westover. She was on Fresh Air back in February.
Right.
So if you want a little conversation before you read or after you read, you can look for that as well. All right, Tim, that's back to you.
Well, my next nonfiction title is by Paula Poundstone. This book just came out in paperback this month. And your listeners may know her if they listen to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on NPR on Saturdays and Sunday mornings. It has a rather cumbersome title, "The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness." And what Ms. Poundstone has done, I mean, she's a single mom of three adopted children. She has 16 cats, two dogs, a very chaotic lifestyle, but she decides to try to find this happiness thing that people talk about so much. And so it's divided into essays about these little things she did. She tries exercise. That makes people happy. She takes taekwondo lessons. She tries ballroom dancing. My favorite chapter was when she decided to get her house organized. Now, any mother is going to love this book. I found it hysterical. If you like comedy, I mean, laughing so hard that I had to stop reading and go find a Kleenex to wipe my eyes. The day she decides to just sit and watch videos with her three children is priceless. This is the kind of book you read on an airplane and annoy the person sitting next to you because you're laughing out loud. So, and it's also great for traveling. And, you know, you read one and then you can come back to it later. It's not linear at all, so you don't really have to worry about keeping track of things. But it is very funny read.
All right. "The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness" by Paula Poundstone. And Kathy, we're back to you.
Well, this one's a little darker, Tim. It's the fact
I think almost anything would be
true.
Darker
right.
than Paula. Yeah.
Right.
This is The Fact of a Body, a Murder and a Memoir by Alexandra Mirzano-Lesnovich. Alexandra is the child of two lawyers, and she was staunchly anti-death penalty. She started working as a summer job in Louisiana defending men who were accused of murder. And one day she's doing some research and flashes across the face of convicted murderer Ricky Langley. And her first instinct is, this man needs to die. And she is so shocked by that because this goes against anything she ever believed that she starts looking into it and discovers that she's got some connections with this. I started reading this and I was so sucked in that I was halfway through the book before I realized that I had been sitting there for a couple of hours. It is really interesting. It's split between Alexandra's recollections and the story of the murder, and I can't recommend it highly enough.
All right. The Fact of a Body by Alexandra Mirzano-Lesnovich. And Jan, it's your turn again.
Well, I could talk about a murder book, too, but I think I won't. I'll talk about Michael Pollan's How to Change Your Mind, which is one of actually a number of books that have come out this spring about the resurgence of using psychedelic drugs. But his, I think, is probably the most, you know, thorough because I think he got into this subject through mushrooms because he's been a food writer. Mm-hmm. And so I think he went from, you know, morels to psilocybin.
Okay. not a path everyone takes, but all right.
But our, you know, my understanding of psychedelic drugs was always very rooted in the Timothy Leary in the 1960s.
Sure.
And the sort of, you know, tune in, turn on, drop out thing. But actually, the people were experimenting with them for health reasons from, I think, the 1920s or 30s on. And in fact, the person who started AA had taken psilocybin. And so when he's talking about a higher power, he is actually talking about that experience. Even though one of the things that Michael Pollan believes and people that are using them for medical purposes believe is that you can change your mind with a single experience. You can actually cure addictions and depression with a guided experience, with a single experience in which some medical professional
right.
is with you.
Right, and there are people running research projects
right.
about this
right.
right now.
And so, yeah, and so now, but when Timothy Leary was spreading the word, mm-hmm. he had actually started from this side too, you know, using it for more restorative purposes.
Right. Obviously,
but
things
then
changed
things
pretty dramatically,
changed
right?
dramatically and rapidly, and then it became, you know, something that nobody could touch for 50 years until now. And now I think they're using it a lot in Silicon Valley, these microdoses that are supposed to make people more imaginative and creative.
Wow.
Yeah. And but it's a very interesting book, you
all
know,
right.
just about the history of that substance.
All right, an experimentation. All right, How to Change Your Mind by Michael Pollan. Tim, back to you.
The next book I'll talk about, you know, unfortunately, is not out yet, so this is kind of unfair to your listeners. It comes out on July 5th.
Called, I think we can be patient.
Okay. Called, this will be a great thing to look forward to after the 4th of July. Eager, The Surprising Secret Life of Beavers and Why They Matter by Ben Goldfarb. And Mr. Goldfarb is a journalist who has many articles that have been published in Outdoor Magazine and these sort of things, and he's finally written a book. And, you know, I didn't know anything about beavers, and I just found this the most charming, enlightening. He's a wonderfully clever, witty writer. You have chapters called Appetite for Construction and California Streaming. So he's very clever in his wordplay. And you get a history of the beavers, you know, from sort of an evolutionary take. And then, of course, you know, the history of trapping, which is directly linked to our westward expansion as settlers, which are things I did not know. And then he starts to go into the reintroduction of beavers into settlements because of what they do for habitats and for to prevent erosion and just how amazing they are as as far as what they do for the ecology. He makes a lot of correlations between humans and beavers. You know, we're kind of the only mammals that really try to engineer our spaces for food and shelter. People will learn a lot, and it's a great summer book if you happen to be somewhere rural where you can actually see the subject of the book you're reading about. So I think it will be a very fun read for, especially for Midwesterners, but for anybody who's interested in nature.
All right, so out in July, Eager, The Surprising Secret Life of Beavers and Why They Matter by Ben Goldfarb. And Kathy?
My next book is The Feather Thief, Beauty, Obsession, and the Natural History Heist of the Century. The author, Kirk Wallace Johnson, was fishing one day, and his guide told him what sounded like a tall tale about somebody breaking into the British Museum of Natural History and stealing a collection of ornithological species, specimens, just for the feathers. And he stole these to put the feathers on the black market for the salmon fly-tying crowd. And which sounds totally ridiculous, but apparently is really true. The book reminded me a lot of The Orchid Thief from 15, 20 years ago. It's an introduction to a world that just boggles your mind. Talk about insane people.
All right. A different perspective on the world. The Feather Thief by Kirk Wallace Johnson. Jan?
Well, so I'll go back to my murder book, and it's called Death and Life in the Sunshine State by Cutter Wood. And Cutter Wood's a graduate of the nonfiction writing program at the University of Iowa, and it is a memoir. He had been at a family reunion in the Tampa Bay area, and there were too many people staying at the main, you know, family house, and so they put him up. The family put him up in this motel, and he goes back to school here, and realizes that there's been this murder, that the hotel has been burned, and that there's been a murder. And so he kind of goes down there in the same sort of spirit that Truman Capote went to Kansas after the murder there. And it's just kind of remarkable how people will talk to him. I mean, he, in the same way that they talk to Truman Capote. I mean, this is unsolved, and so he, you know, he talks to the officers involved, he talks to the family members involved, and he gets completely enmeshed in this whole sort of weird life of the woman who was murdered was from Germany and married the guy that owned the motel so that she could be a U.S. citizen, but didn't really have an actual marriage with him, and then falls in love with a convict, and all of them talk to him. I mean, not her because she's not there, but the husband and the widower, I guess, and the convict, and the police, and he finally just sort of at wit's end has to sort of turn it into a novel because nothing is ever really going to be known, and so he spends the last third of the book just sort of imagining this. The psychological, you know, the life and psychology of these characters and this happens. And so it's sort of fantasy and reality in one. But it's really beautiful. It's a really odd and interesting book.
All right. Love and Death in the Sunshine State by Cutter Wood. And I know you all have many more great picks that we don't have time to talk about. But thank you so much.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Charity.
Jan Weissmiller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City and Kathy Magruder from Page Turner's Books in Indianola. We will post the whole list on our website later today at iowapublicradio.org. Happy reading this summer. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.